is Leadoff with Ziggy and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Guys, I've had two right shoulder operations. Throwing a baseball and trying to swing a bat are not at the top of the lists on activities you can resume. And if I actually hit this ball and make contact, wow.
He played in the NHL, and his strength was the face-off guy. So he's got quick wrists, strong forearms. I'll tell you what. Within three pitches, he's made solid contact. No chance, that's what you got. You're up against a machine too strong. Pretty politicians buying souls for one song. Hobbits won't find their place in line. But tie a streak around your finger now, boy, cause it's just a matter of time. Cause you got no chance. No chance in hell.
All right. We're not waiting an hour. We're not waiting 2 hours. We're not doing a big grand reveal here. You want to know, did Mike, what's your middle name?
Thomas.
Did Michael Thomas Zygomanis hit a 90-mile-an-hour fastball off of a pitching machine yesterday up at the dugout in Concord, Ontario, Canada? Before we tell you whether he made contact, forward-moving contact with a 90-mile-an-hour fastball off a pitching machine, let's review some of the guesses that some of our guests offered up, including Tim Leeper.
I initially thought Ziggy wouldn't be able to do this today, but I talked yesterday with Eugene Melnick, and he said that Ziggy definitely can. So I feel a little bit better about his chances today.
Well,
as long as Eugene said it, it must be.
It has to be true.
It'll probably happen. Oh, yeah.
Anthony Stewart wasn't a believer.
You have zero chance in hell of hitting getting a hit off of a 90-mile-an-hour pitch. Yeah, 50, maybe 60, Ziggy, but 90... I don't know who you're kidding. So unless you do the Happy Gilmore where you stand right in front of home plate, you're striking out like a stanza, baby.
David Amber, I don't think David Amber believed, but I think David Amber is too nice a guy to totally shut down the idea.
I won't be as emphatic as Stewie, but, you know, I said this last week when I was on. I said, I don't think he's got a shot. But, listen, the guy's a pro athlete, and I'm just a civilian, so I'm not going to sit here and say there's not a chance, but it would be highly unlikely.
And Mike Zygomanis had this to say in the final segment of yesterday's show leading to our trip to the batting cage.
Imagine I hit a bunch at 90 and like it goes online and somebody from the Jays reaches out. Like, wouldn't that be a story?
What if Ross Atkins offered you seven figures?
Not seven. I'll play for the minimum. Okay, but just imagine somebody reaches out and says, hey, this is not bad.
I think this is a real possibility.
I think it could.
Leaf, what are the chances of that?
So what you're saying is I have a chance.
Yeah. It's all dumb and dumber. All dumb and dumber. All right, Silent Vic, a drum roll, please. Michael Thomas Zygomanis, give us the big reveal. Did you hit a 90-mile-an-hour fastball off a pitching machine at the dugout in Concord yesterday morning?
Scotty, not only did I hit a 90, but I went a lot higher than 90. Yep. Please turn that up just a little. Yeah. There we go. And let me tell you, my hand is paying for it today. I can't even write this morning. Never mind trying to open my computer, get the whole tech set up this morning to call in. My right hand is bruised. I can't feel it. And that was worse than blocking a shot off my ankle.
You're like when George Costanza became a hand model and the boss was warning him not to.
Yeah.
His hand became so gnarled, he was unable to manipulate utensils.
But
dude,
yeah,
I'm telling you right now, you did it. And look, you know me well enough to know that if there was any possible way for me to argue against you having done it, to have found some kind of mitigating factor to poke a hole in the reality of what it was that I and Hayden and Silent Vic and Silk Gentilly, Kevin Barker, witnessed, I'd do it. But you hit a 90-mile-an-hour fastball, and you continued to swing at pitches, and you got bat on ball on a 101-mile-an-hour fastball.
I still can't believe the 101. So I got the advice to start right at, like, we went right to 90, right? We started at 80, maybe like high 80s. Well, but they, right.
Yeah, the guys there, and we want to give shout-outs to Jason Booth and Kyle McKay at the dugout.
We'll tell you
all about the dugout in just a little bit. But Jason and Kyle were great to us. They spent a good period of time getting that machine ready, right? Because it was in the 80 range, 85, and then it would bump up to 95. So they honed it down for us. So we got a good look from behind the cage at what it was we were dealing with to start.
Yeah, it was a little quicker. So I walk into the building late.
You were pissed off too.
I was.
You were totally grumpy. You were angry. I said to Silk, he's a grumpy wump because he's worried he's going to get his ass kicked. He did. What, you're not smiling at anybody. You had the hood pulled over your head.
There was no parking, and I had to park 2 kilometers away, and I walk in the rain. I'm like absolutely Ziggy. Soaked. I think Mike did it on purpose just to get me going.
Dude, there was no parking in front when I arrived. There was parking at the side of the building, and I just pulled my car up to the side.
No one told me that. So I'm
Nobody
parked,
told
like,
me that.
I'm parked in a different county.
I used
I'm
my
walking
eyes.
There. So that's how it all started. So I walk in, hoodie's down. I see the pitches coming in. Now I'm getting really worried. Like, okay, I thought I'd make contact with a couple. They'd go, you know, just like a couple tip fouls. And then they start coming in and you're watching that. I didn't think I could hit one walking in. I thought maybe I'd get a piece. Now I'm thinking I'm not going to make contact even. So none of the helmets fit me because I've got a size 7 and 8 5/8.
And I just want to throw an interjection in here and say that I tried to take a photo, but Ziggy caught me and turned away. I tried to take a photo of you in one of those non-fitting helmets, but
we ended up getting the right one on. It was a little snug. I didn't have batting gloves. That would have helped. Is that what you call them? Batting gloves?
Yeah, batting gloves.
Okay. So,
and Kevin Barker's there, right?
Yeah. Kevin Barker is there, and I'm like, yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. Do I warm up? I mean, is that going to help really? I mean, when it came down to it, I didn't even tie my shoes up. I was just like, at this point, I'm not going to hit one. It's not looking good. I'm soaked. You know, we had the show in the morning. I'm like, okay, this is going to be embarrassing. Let's just get it over with. So I see Kevin Barker. He brings me, he sees my stance and he's like, that's not going to work for anything. You might not even hit a T-ball with that. So we actually did go over to the T-ball cage, and we ran through a bunch of stuff, like stance, where to go, what's going to happen, timing, grip, all of that. I'm not trying to pump Barker's tires, but all those lessons did help.
We have audio, and this is going to be spread all over social media through the week next week. There's some preview videos up on our Twitter accounts at Fan590, at Scotty Mac Thinks, at Mike Zigomanis, and we will continue to promote that through next week because our wonderful Sportsnet digital team is putting together an entire montage, a story, Monday to Friday of next week, broken into a few different segments. Here is some sound from Ziggy and Kevin Barker in the, what do you call it, the cage? It wasn't really a cage, but where the batting tee was. This was separate and off from where the pitching machine was.
You just want to be able to just drop it down. And you can move your feet. You don't have to do it stationary. Well, yeah, because you're not trying to get a hit. You're just trying to hit it somewhere that way.
Forward motion.
That's exactly right. So don't go stay. I'll give you $10 you do that with that machine. If you go Happy Gilmore.
Yeah. So
and Barker was not believing in you after the tee experience.
No, he said this is not going to be good. He goes, he's like, buddy, this is not going to happen. So his lesson helped. I'm telling you, like, just I didn't understand. I really haven't been to a batting cage in 20 years. I haven't hit a ball. I've never hit a ball. I mean, I'm trying to think the highest fastball I would ever hit in a batting cage. It wasn't 90, and it definitely wasn't 101. But the two of the three good balls I made contact with once I did get in, they really, like, I'm telling you, my hand was black. Like, my right hand, because I wasn't holding the bat the right way. So that was a big issue, right?
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
I would love to sit up there and try to hit those all day. But after a while, you're like, if I don't get this in the sweet spot, I can't drive. Like, you literally can't hold your steering wheel after
driving. Yeah, and it was like Kevin was showing us, just especially with the top hand on the bat, just how loosely you want it resting in your hand. And of course, you want to line up your knuckles on both hands. I did remember that from my competitive baseball days as a boy. I retained that much. I don't think I did it very well, though.
Well, you could tell you could hit. Like, you had the stance, you had the follow through. So, yeah, I mean, that's another, I mean, you hit 90 as well.
Yeah, I got around on 92. I didn't hit a line drive. I beat
contact.
It would have been a chopper to the third baseman, but I turned on 92. I was stunned because I'm being honest when I say I hadn't been in a batting cage for 15 years. Mm-hmm. And maybe it was that piece of advice that you got from that former coach in your life or something, Ziggy. My issue at the Grand Bend batting cage on a holiday weekend 15 years ago in the summer was that I started at 60, and then by the time I got to 75, I couldn't adjust. So maybe the fact that we just stepped in right then against 90. So what had happened was you had hit 90. I don't know if you'd hit 101 yet. You'd remember the order, but I stepped in. I was the second to go, and I'm telling you, I was nerve-wracked because there was no way that I was going to step in there and just swing and flail and miss after you had made contact. I didn't want to be the guy.
I put the pressure on
you. You put the pressure. Oh, yeah, you set the bar. So I step in, and Barker was great. He said, look at the first couple of pitches to get a sense of the speed of them. Okay.
They were coming in fast. Come on. That was quicker than I expected.
Yeah, they were.
It was like,
and you hear it hit the back netting or padding.
You hear it hit the back. That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Like, that's the noise, and you're like, oh. So then the first two pitches I faced, I swung and missed. But I didn't, and then Barker was really, really good because Kevin was perfect yesterday because he'd give us crap. But then at the same, in the next breath, he would, a pat on the back, good piece of advice. And the one thing he kept saying was just keep your bat on a consistent path. Mm-hmm. And I decided, and I think you did too, you can speak to it for you, I decided I'm going to swing at the same level with each pitch. I've seen enough come in now. If the machine goes up or if it goes a little bit further down, I'm going to swing over top of it. I'm going to swing underneath it. I'll live with that. But I am going to make contact with a pitch that gets me, and I think it was like between just below the knees, above mid shin. That's where I tried to keep my bat path. and that led to some success. I ended up strategizing a bit.
Yeah, and I mean, everybody hit 90, at least 90, right?
Everybody made contact.
Everybody made contact with 90, so that was...
Silent Vic, Hayden, Silk Gentile. Everyone. Silk Gentile was a lefty, too.
Yeah, he was hitting the wrong way. Well, I was going to go lefty if the righty didn't work, but...
Because you're just ambidextrous like that. Whatever. It was a lot of fun, dude.
Yeah, it was great. It was awesome. I mean, you broke a bat.
Well,
like, can we talk about that now?
Yeah. So
that's more impressive than anything.
James from the Sportsnet Digital side brought a wooden bat, and I don't know if one got in on me. It certainly that it my hands stung, like,
yeah.
And I'm gonna tweet out a photo of both of my hands. That space between your thumb and the bottom, very bottom knuckle of your index finger. On my left hand is very, very normal. I'm a right-handed hitter. On my right hand, it's, I don't want to say double the size, but it hurts this morning too. And I got a bit of sinker action or fade action in toward me. And I didn't get it on the sweet spot, and the bat splintered. It didn't break in half, but it splintered, and I felt that one.
Yeah, I couldn't believe you broke the bat. Like, that says a lot. For you to break a bat, there's your proof how, like, fast those things are coming in. You're not breaking a bat with 80. Not happening.
No.
No, so that, I mean, it was, I couldn't believe. But when you take them inside like that, you're right. It does hurt your hand. Like, if you don't hit it right in the sweet spot, I hit one, like, line drive up the middle. I didn't even feel it leave my bat.
No,
like, when you hit it in the right spot.
That was the best hit of the day.
Mm-hmm.
That definitely Jose Altuve, because he's 5'2", he would have leapt for that one, and it would have been over Jose Altuve. I don't know if it would have been over DJ LeMahieu. But it would have been over Jose Altuve. That was a base hit. That was a knock.
I hit a couple better than I expected, but we did turn it up, I believe, to 104. I got a couple swipes at that, and that, I mean.
You wanted to see if you could hit Aroldis at his best, right? And Aroldis Chapman. Was up 104, 105 at his very best. He doesn't hit that much anymore, but. That when he was at his best breaking into the big leagues, having come from Cuba, he could get to 103, 104.
And so I did see a 104. I mean, every 3-4 miles, it's like you can tell when it's like 90, 94, 97. I'm like, okay, let's get it going. Let's turn it up a little.
Yeah.
And then like 91, and I'm like, whoa.
Now imagine having to honor the possibility of an 87 mile an hour slider or, Ziggy, a pitch just like the one you face, but 10 miles an hour slower, a changeup, where it looks like a fastball coming out of the pitcher's hand, same delivery, everything, but it's coming at you 10 miles per hour, 12 miles per hour slower.
Well, that's the first thing. So I got out of the cage, I hit a bunch of 90s, and I came out, and I was like, imagine if you didn't really, I mean, we kind of know what's coming, right? That's the thing. We know what's coming in the cage. And I'm like, imagine facing a changeup, a slider, a sinker. Like, you don't know what's coming. Or they change the pitch by 10 miles or 15 miles an hour. That's what I think would be the hard part.
Right.
Is that pitcher comes in, starts throwing some heat, 94, 95, 96. Then all of a sudden he throws you 84 changeup. Like, what do you do? Like, you have to find a way to kind of lay off it, right?
Yeah, and you'll see big league hitters get out in front and swing and miss or foul it off. Yeah.
Yeah, but I will say about yesterday, I don't know if you could notice when you were up there hitting, but there was some movement to the balls. They were moving. They weren't just coming in the same spot every time. Mine were moving. Yours definitely were moving. Like, for most of the guys, they did have some movement on it.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pitching machine.
Somebody got hit. Didn't somebody like...
Yeah, James, our buddy, it ran in on his fingers.
Yeah, so I mean, you had to be ready.
Yeah, if you consider the pitching machine to be right-handed, I'm a right-handed hitter, you would call that kind of a sink. But if it was a lefty, cut action, right? Cutting in toward the right-handed hitter. Mm-hmm. That was the movement that we noticed. Yeah,
so it wasn't everyone's like, oh, you probably hit it. It was a fastball in the same location every time. I'm like, no, actually, it wasn't. So, yeah, it was. I had a lot of fun. I mean, besides hitting it, I think it's kind of cool getting a baseball lesson. I mean, my phone has been blowing up. Everybody's like, did you hit it? I got, you know, dozens of messages.
Right. And
did you make contact? I'm like, got to tune in tomorrow.
That was it. That was it. It was funny. David Amber wanted to make it yesterday and couldn't. So he reached out to me and I said, look, you got to keep this under your hat. Not only did he do it, he hit 101. And I want to be very clear about this. I would love nothing more than to sit here and poke holes in all of this. Mike Zigomanis really did hit a 101 mile an hour fastball. It really happened. Like I was there, the radar gun, everything. I wish
with everybody
God
else
knows. Like, I wish I was lying.
Where's the poll at? We have a final tally.
Well, we
on
put
the poll?
A poll up. So I'm sitting there last night in between icing sessions on my hand because I'm a very injured person, and I put it up with I'm looking at it right now, actually 5:21 yesterday afternoon Eastern time, and I closed it at 6 o'clock this morning. The question was simple: do you think Mike Zigomanis hit a 90 mile an hour fastball? 68% of respondents out of 737 votes said no.
Oh wow! Hmm.
So
interesting.
The approximately one third who was with you was correct. Was correct.
No one had faith in me, huh?
So I'll just say this: if you grew up playing baseball and you haven't played in a really long time, and you're around Ziggy's in my age, 39, 40, 41, Hugh was, you know, Hugh's 42. So, wrong number, 50
plus
or something. 10. Yeah, plus 10. All right, 52. Like, Hugh made contact, too. If you played and you want to give this a try, I'd love to know. I think more people could hit. Knowing it's a 90-mile-an-hour fastball that's coming, not having to wonder if it's a 78-mile-an-hour changeup or an 83-mile-an-hour slider. If you know what's coming and you can get your bat in the path, you're not necessarily going to hit the first one. But give it a shot. I think you can do it. I knew I was screwed on our bet, Ziggy, on your first swing, even though you didn't push the ball forward. You were on it. You foul tipped.
I made contact. First pitch, that helped.
First pitch, you fouled back. Second pitch was a pop foul back mm-hmm. over our heads. So there was no forward movement. But I turned to Silk and I said, he's on this. And I like you were on the ball. Like you were on these pitches. I knew I was screwed. Before you hit the ball forward, I knew I was screwed.
Yeah, so we got to go. We got to give a shout out. Sammy Moses, awesome advice. Right to the 90. I'm telling you, that helped. And I got to go, my grade 7-8 baseball coach, Mr. Rob Watson, taught me everything about baseball. So
okay.
It's still stuck with me all these years later.
And a shout out to the only one at this radio station who truly believed in you, Jeff Blair.
Oh, yeah.
I say within three pitches, he's made solid contact. Three pitches.
Blair was right.
Yep. Jeffy, love you, buddy. Always believes in me.
Always believes
in
you.
The only one who believes in me. Sorry.
The only one at this radio station who believed you could do it. And he was right. And also shout-outs to Jason Booth and Kyle McKay. They are the co-owners and senior instructors at The Dugout, which is located at 62 Buttermill Avenue in Concord. So it's an interchange or two south of Canada's Wonderland off the 400. It's awesome. They do, and, you know, there's been some shutdowns in the York region for COVID-19 that were announced yesterday, but in ordinary times they do kids' birthday parties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They do individual instruction. Teams can avail themselves of the batting cages there. They do a bunch of different individualized and team baseball training. It's an awesome spot. The Dugout at 62 Buttermill Avenue in Concord.
Yeah, great spot. Awesome facility. I mean,
and you'll see it all over. It was great. You'll see it all over our social media.
Yeah, going on
next week because
we're rolling this out, eh?
Poor James with his battered hand because he got hit by a pitch.
I'd rather get hit by a pitch than hit one in the wrong spot of the bat.
Right. I think he was on top of the plate a little too much.
It looked like it was bleeding for a little.
He was in pain, but he's the one who's putting all this together. So you'll see a storyboard of it. We'll release some stuff Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, of course, culminating in Ziggy's big moment. So our thanks to our friends at the Dugout. Look forward to doing more with you down the road. We will continue to revisit the experience yesterday. It was a lot of fun. I had my Sammy Sosa jersey on, by the way.
Oh, forgot about that. Yep. Love the Sammy Sosa.
So I was just walking in. I wanted to be a cheater right out of the gate. Dan Schulman will be along at 8:30. He's calling the Rays Astros series, but I'm sure what kept him up last night was wondering how you did. So Dan Schulman's seen a 100 mile an hour fastball in his day from the radio broadcast booth. We'll get a sense of what he thinks of your accomplishment. Elliot Friedman for his weekly Friday hit at 8:00. What about an all Canadian division? A big signing yesterday in Ottawa. The Habs and Brendan Gallagher seem to be on the outs. And then within 24 hours, a deal got signed. We'll go over that. Steve Rapp, Charles Davis in the 7:00 hour. Hughes just sat down. We will burl the lead, which pretty much means talk about any and all of the sports unrelated to the batting cage. We'll burl the lead next.
Lead Off presents Burl the Lead.
Hey, you, what's up? What's happening, baby?
Right. Thank goodness you're here, Hugh, to reset the sanity. I just can't take all the happy congratulatory texts coming into 590-590.
Yeah. Now keep pouring them in. I'm going to print them all out, put them on my wall.
Now, Hugh, you can confirm that we saw what we saw yesterday, right?
Yeah. I'm shook. Scotty, I'm shook. I saw it. I'm not sure I believed what I was seeing, but I saw it.
You made contact too, man.
Yeah,
you hit a 90-ish. 90-ish something.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to get my bat in front of one or two of them. I mean, but I'm much older than you guys, so there's no way I was going to hit in the consistent bait. Just the timing, and Ziggy and Scotty, you can attest to this, the timing is so, you have to be so exact. Boy, I was guessing on so many of those pitches. And swinging and missing spectacularly at most of them.
Yeah, but I think you decided to do what we did too, which is keep your bat in a particular path.
Yeah.
And the machine was up with you a little bit. That's what got you.
I was better when they were a little bit lower. But,
exactly.
But you know what? All kidding aside, Ziggy, that was really, really impressive yesterday. Congratulations, my friend. That was a well done. Good for you.
And that'll be all over Sportsnet 590 The Fan's Twitter account, Instagram account. We'll storyboard it through the week next week. So fun visuals and lots of laughs.
Yeah, and we all had a great time out there. Thanks to everybody up at the Dugout as well. Thank you so much for that. George Springer took the first Rays pitch of the game into the upper deck and left for a home run. Carlos Correa took the final pitch of the game deep over the center field fence.
And here is Carlos Correa. You saw a pretty epic backflip by G-Man Choi. If Carlos Correa hits one out of here, you may see
the
world's longest backflip. One ball, one strike. In the air, center field. Correa's watching. This is back.
By the way, the pitch that Correa hit, 96 miles an hour up in the strike zone. Ziggy would have pounded that completely out of the park, by the way. No chance.
If it was 98 or 99, I'd give it a shrug, but it's not even close to me.
It's not even worth your time, really.
No, not at all.
4-3 Astros the final. They force a game six tonight. They were down 3-0. They're now down 3-2. Scotty, people getting nervous?
I think the Rays
getting nervous.
I think so. I do think Tampa Bay is going to win this series. I think that their pitching sets up still well for them. And we knew that this was going to be a series. I think if you'd said to me, we go on six, I would have told you yes. Maybe at 3-0, I would have said no. But we were probably going this deep, and as well we should, because these are two pretty good teams, even though Houston didn't have a great 60-game regular season record.
No, they're a fun team to hate, so they're a fun team to watch. You hate
How about Correa saying he said he was going to, he felt he was going to hit, he was going to end it?
Yeah, he told Dusty Baker in the dugout, I'm going to end this.
Yeah, I can't take anything.
And now you know people are going back for the footage. Do I hear any tapping in the distance?
Exactly. Yeah, I know.
I knew a fastball up was coming.
Game six of that series.
He says, I knew I was going to end it. I said it to the manager. The bad boy. Like, just even if you did say it to him, like,
keep it to yourself.
Embraced the heel turn.
I think the team in general has. I think they're starting to revel in this now. It's us against everybody, and we'll show you kind of thing. That can be a really helpful attitude.
But you know who kind of makes them their one babyface good guy element is Dusty Baker, their manager. It's kind of like, well, I want to cheer for Dusty because he's missing the World Series as a manager. That's the one thing he's missing on his resume. But I don't want to cheer for these players.
Game six tonight, 6 o'clock on Sportsnet. Meantime, the Braves went away from winning the NLCS after a 10-2 hammering of the Dodgers. Nice effort, considering they were blasted 15-3 by LA in game three. Clayton Kershaw's 4.31 career ERA, the worst in Major League Baseball history amongst pitchers with over 100 playoff innings. Wow.
Well, hold on a second. I thought the Dodgers were going to storm back and win this thing in six with four consecutive victories because of the ninth inning of game two and the 15-run outburst in game
three.
That's
what everybody was saying on Twitter. Oh, they're picking up right where they left off. The Dodgers are back. Well, the Braves may have something to say about
that. Or was Earl Weaver onto something way back in the day? Momentum is only as strong as your next day's starting pitcher.
That's absolutely right. Game five of that series goes tonight, 9 o'clock, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Blue Jays shortstop Bo Bichette was on Good Show yesterday, telling the boys that he'd love to have outspoken pitcher Trevor Bauer as a part of the team, but that stuff will take care of itself. Talked about how the team became closer during the quarantine as well, and he was also asked about his contract. Now, he's under control until 2024, so Bo says he's in no hurry.
You know, it's been brought up, and it's definitely something I'm interested in, but at the same time, I'm not going to sell myself short. So, we'll see what happens. But right now, I'm not too worried about it. I've still got a lot to prove in my career, and really the last thing on my mind is a contract extension. So, you never know what happens, but I'm not too worried about it right now.
I don't think anybody should be worried that the Jays will do everything they can to get this guy pen to paper.
So there are,
and when the time comes.
There are players who have done this. Scott Kingery in Philadelphia, Ronald Acuna Jr. with Atlanta, signing contracts really before they've ever played a big league game. And what that does is it locks them in to certain salary numbers, and those salary numbers escalate through the years because they take into account your cheapest years and your arbitration eligible years. You usually buy out a year or two of free agency. So the salaries escalate, but it prevents or no longer causes the need for your team to manipulate your service time because you're locked in. Bo's past that now. His clock has begun. He's been in the big leagues for a year and a half. He doesn't need to make any decision. The Blue Jays control him, as you said, Hugh, till 2024. If he goes out and let's just say finishes top five in American League MVP voting next year because he has such a great year, he has 2 years where he's really, really good, he's going to be worth a whole heck of a lot more. And then he can sit down with the Jays and say, all right, you got 2 or 3 years left of control. If you want me to stay past my first shot at free agency eligibility, this is what it's going to take. I want 20, 3 years from now. I want 22, 4 years, like whatever.
And by the time we get there, those numbers might even be higher. Yeah,
there
that,
really so. Is no rush from the player's perspective. And the only rush the team would have is if they project him to be great and they want to try to get the salary under control. But Bo doesn't have to play that game.
Nope. Hey, one of the
I'm wondering what they offer him. Like, I'd love to know the number.
It's going to be
huge. You've got to think they're trying something right. No, but you have to think when he's like, I don't want to sell myself short. They must have approached him and said, hey.
What it would look like, Ziggy, would be, and Mike Trout's the most extreme, but, you know, Bo, if they were to do this tomorrow, they would pay Bo probably $800,000 or $900,000 next year. And then the salaries would escalate based on arbitration projections for a guy with his output. So maybe he'd make $4 or $5 million in the second year, up to 8 or 9 or 10 in the third, up to 10 to 12 to 14, and then when he hits free agency or would hit free agency, it jumps to 20 or 22. It would reflect the reality of his salary escalation through the years.
But even $7, $8, $9 million for this guy still seems like he's underpaid.
Well, let's hope. I mean, let's hope he's full value. He looks like he's going to be a great one.
Yeah. One of the newest Leafs was made available to the media yesterday. Jimmy Vesey. He revealed that his dad is a big fan of Kyle Dubas, that he loves playing in big markets, and that he already has a connection with Leafs center Alex Kerfoot from their days at Havid, where they pack the car.
In Havid yet?
In the yard.
He was my centerman for 2 years. Now I obviously have a very high level of respect for how good of a player he is. And, you know, he can really pass the puck, really sees the ice well. And fortunately for me in college, I was the beneficiary of a lot of that.
So that's VC. Also yesterday, Jumbo signed an HC Davos. Now, the rumors and speculation just won't die down that Joe Thornton will soon be a Toronto Maple Leaf. Is this a good move for the team to bring Thornton in? Because I kind of agree with Brian Burke, who was on Tim and Sid yesterday, and said it's not. Jason Spezza already fills that kind of veteran leadership role. Ziggy, what do you think?
I have a hard time believing they'd bring in two veteran guys. Nothing against Joe Thornton. I think he's great. Talked to a couple guys that played with him, said one of the best teammates they've ever had. I just, having two older players in your lineup, where are they both going to play? Are you going to put them both together in the fourth line? Is one of them going to play third line? I just can't see it. Joe doesn't skate the way he skated when he was a lot younger. You lose a step in your 40s. We've seen Patrick Marleau, one of the best skaters during his whole time in the NHL. Very few guys could skate better than him, and he's stayed with it. But you even seen him when he was playing with the Leafs, right?
That happened.
What
so
was he
quick
like
too?
Yeah. So I think somebody's gonna take him. I do not think it's going to be the Leafs, but he's playing in Sweden. Everyone's asking me, why is he playing in Switzerland? His wife is from there.
Yeah.
So,
and he also didn't play in the bubble. He hadn't played since March.
Yeah.
Because the Sharks were a bad team. Right?
Yeah. He's got to play. If he doesn't get skates on soon, you don't take a year off and then all of a sudden, I'm just going to play again. It's tough.
Yeah.
You take a long summer, or you miss part of the year because of surgery. It's hard to get back in it.
Let's be honest. Some of us 41-year-olds can take 15 years off of the batting cage and get around.
Let me tell
on
you,
92.
Some of us, can take 20 years off and hit 101. Yeah, okay. What happens?
Here we go.
Every now and then.
Gentlemen, it's not often you see an NHL general manager get visibly emotional when talking about a player. But yesterday, there was Habs GM Mark Bergevin getting all choked up about the re-signing of Brendan Gallagher.
He got cross-checked in the face, and he wouldn't want to miss a shift. He didn't want to leave. You have guys in the past I've seen, they get slashed, and they get a fingernail missing, and they're finding a way not to play. This guy's just, he's everything you want about a hockey player, and that's what I love about him. And he just loves, he's a hockey player through his bone, and that's what I love about him.
Gallagher re-upped a 6-year, $39 million deal with a $6.5 million AAV. And Bergevin wanted to clear up any kind of misconception that there was some frost between these two. He said there wasn't. It was just a miscommunication. The plan always was for Gallagher to retire as a Montreal Canadian. And he really, really loves the way that that guy plays. He's such a small guy, and you saw the cross check that he took from Zdeno Chara. Yeesh. Didn't want to miss a shift. Great player.
He earned it. I played against him in the minors. Not a big guy. He had a fight to get to the NHL, yep. And then once he got there, he was, he's a guy that he really earned it. That's the thing, right?
And you're happy for him to see him get the big deal now. Yeah.
Yeah, I think who was with him? Was it not Pacioretty, Gallagher, and who was the other small centerman for the Habs? He's been traded away from. I can't even think. I think it was the three of them were all playing together. But, yeah, I mean, this is a guy he has to go out there every night. Look, yep. I mean, when he doesn't score and put up the points, how much was he getting questioned? Yeah. He was playing great in the bubble but couldn't score, and people were all over him.
Yep. Yeah, so unfairly so. He's the engine of that team for sure. Let's cover some NBA stuff here. Rockets GM Daryl Morey is stepping down after 13 years in the position. Anthony Davis will reportedly decline his $28.7 million player option, and he will re-sign with the Lakers. And the Clippers have promoted Ty Lue to head coach to replace Doc Rivers. Now, Lue might be inheriting a dysfunctional basketball team. The Athletic is reporting that a number of Clippers players were upset with the preferential treatment given to Kawhi Leonard this season. Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, Patrick Beverley, the most outspoken about Kawhi's load management and the fact that the team allowed Kawhi to live in San Diego, resulting in him often being late for team flights. Uh-oh.
The team flights thing I could see getting annoying, but they had to know, without having lived it every day, what Kawhi was doing in Toronto the previous year. And they had to see that it worked. So the load management stuff, get over that. Sitting on the tarmac waiting for a teammate to show up multiple times a year, if it's happening a lot, that would piss me off.
You're going to say right off the bat that that's not going to bother you, but as the season wears on, yeah, that's gonna start to grind on you a little bit.
I'm pretty sure most team planes just leave.
Not without Kawhi, they don't. Not without Kawhi, they don't.
Yeah, not without your bread and butter.
Get your own way there. I mean, I've seen a lot of buses leave going to the airport. Players not on it.
Star players? Bye-bye.
They like Sidney Crosby ever miss a bus?
No, he never missed a bus. I never missed a bus. Thank you very much. But I've seen a lot of buses. You're not there. Get your own way.
Thank you, Captain Obvious.
Yeah, but
did you text Sidney Crosby to tell him that you hit 101 miles an hour?
No.
Oh, okay.
You should, though. Tell him
that. You should. I'm sure he'd like to hear it.
Yeah.
Old baseball, old buddy of yours.
he hit one out of the park, actually, in Pittsburgh.
Crosby
he hit one out.
Sid would be like, new phone, who dis?
Yeah.
I actually got a new number one time. You know, you mass texted out, and he was like the first to respond and make fun of me. So, yeah.
All right, we can have a winner today. Like we haven't had a winner all week. It has been a struggle in all or nothing. But that means it's good for you. $600 in Nantucket gift cards are up for grabs. I think this ties the record for the most we've given away, because $100 each day it carries over if we don't have a winner. We're on a 5-game losing skid. 416-870-0590, 416-870-0590. If you want to be our contestant, you want to break the losing skid, you want $600 in Nantucket gift cards, call now. We play next.
It's time to play All or Nothing with Ziggy and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, we got $600 in Nantucket gift cards to attempt to give away today. We play All or Nothing at this time each and every morning. All or Nothing, three true or false questions. You've got to get them all right or get them all wrong. So if you get the first one wrong, that's okay. You just got to get questions 2 and 3 intentionally incorrect. $600 in Nantucket gift cards are available for Aiden in Innisfil. Good morning, Aiden.
Hey, how's it going?
We're doing well. Good luck to you. Ziggy's got question number one.
Fastest pitcher ever recorded was from Aroldis Chapman, who hit 105 on the gun. True or false?
True.
That's correct. He was clocked at 105.1 miles per hour in 2010. But some say Nolan Ryan was even a harder pitcher. Yeah. Did they not have the gun back then?
They didn't have the gun way back when he allegedly threw 108 miles per hour.
Allegedly.
All right. Aiden, you're in good shape here. You got to get the next two correct, and the gift cards are yours.
105, 108, doesn't matter. Ziggy's still getting around on it. All right, Aiden. Here's your second question. Free agent Joe Thornton has signed with HC Davos of the Swiss League. Is that true or is that false?
False.
No, sir. That's true. Thornton holds a Swiss passport. He played for them a couple times already during the past two lockouts.
The question I would have asked.
He usually goes to training camp. Like, he usually skates there before the NHL because they start in, like, July 1st.
Right. Yeah.
All the teams overseas. You start early. Your season starts, I think, September 1st. You go for, like, a two-month training camp.
Okay. Well, he's got to play anyway, right? Because he hasn't played since March. San Jose wasn't part of the bubble. They were one of the seven teams with the worst records in the league. So, you know, 41
Davos
years old.
Davos is not a bad place to be. Oh, my goodness.
I would say Switzerland is all right. Switzerland is all right. Maybe, awesome. Ziggy, we could talk to the bosses and do 2 weeks of shows.
I'm in. I'll set it up. You say yeah. You just give me the okay. I'll have it all set up.
I'm giving you the okay. I'm giving you the okay. My question would have been heading into week six of the NFL season, there are four undefeated teams, two in each conference. They are Seattle, Green Bay, Pittsburgh, and Tennessee. The answer to that question would have been true.
True.
So we're going to, good guess you.
Thanks.
So we will set a record on Monday morning when we attempt to give away $700 in Untuckit gift cards when we play All or Nothing. This is the first time in a year since we started doing this show that we have had a fully losing week.
Oh for the week, yeah.
Oh for the week. Charles Davis of the NFL on CBS. Le'Veon Bell signs where? As if Kansas City needed another offensive weapon. The Dak Prescott situation in Dallas. Where does Atlanta go post Dan Quinn? And so much more. Charles Davis next.
Lead off with Ziggy and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
In just a moment here, I think Doug in Brantford makes a good point on the text line to 590-590. Ziggy's 90-mile-per-hour contact and his other stats have an asterisk until the results of a piss test come back.
Believe me, I would have taken performance enhancing.
Look, I mean,
like,
there's no steroids.
Just look at me. You can tell.
There are no steroids.
You can tell.
There might be a little Viagra in there, but there are no steroids. I mean, like, honestly.
You can tell I have not ever taken anything.
You got a melon on you, though. You couldn't find a helmet that fit. Now, I'm usually the one who struggles with that because I got my dad's jeans.
I'm surprised you could see the ball coming in with that hair going down the front.
I folded it back.
You're almost ready for a ponytail.
No, I'm not anywhere close to that. It looks like I am, but I'm not anywhere close to it. I'm not anywhere close.
I think you should tuck that in a ponytail. Start it up top a little bit. You know, the ones that go...
Oh, the man bun.
They go vertical. Well, you started up top. I think you should go with that.
You know, I've never tied my hair. I've never worn it long enough to be able to tie it into any kind of ponytail.
I think you're there.
I'm living in fear of actually having to get to that point. I don't think I'm going to be able to. I think it takes a lot of manual dexterity to get the elastic band and all that. I'm going to screw that up. Is Charles on the phone? Good. Only Charles Davis can save us now from the NFL on CBS. He called the Vegas game in Kansas City last week, and I think he's got Baltimore, Philadelphia in Philly this weekend. Here he is, Charles. How are you?
I'm doing well, and there's no saving you from that. I'm sorry. I love you both, but when you get to where you got, which is elastic man bun, how you? I don't know what to do.
Well, here's
what you have to understand. But hold a second. What you really have to understand, though, is I'm speaking from pure jealousy, because anyone who has enough hair that they can consider a man bun, I'm really upset with, because I don't have it. So that's what it comes down to. So anytime you hear people want to talk about different things, know from where they're coming from, right? If I had plenty of hair, then I probably have a legitimate right to say whether man bun is right, wrong, whatever. But if you don't have it, then you can't get into the conversation. So I'm just putting it on the table, letting you know that just because, you know, I have no hair, I'm not one who should be talking about how people should be wearing their hair.
Well, if I man bun it, Charles, then that'll just keep me consistent as someone who usually jumps in 4 years after the trend has gone cold.
can you go ponytail and then you cut the hole through the back of the helmet or the hat and string it out that way? I mean, there's all sorts of ways that people go about doing different things.
Yes.
But I love the fact that we started this show with about an asterisk about different records and things going on, because somewhere the former commissioner of baseball, Ford Frick, right, is sitting somewhere with a big grin on his face, thinking about how he put the asterisk in play when Roger Maris was chasing down Babe Ruth's record at that time, you know, because I don't know if anyone in the world knew what an asterisk was until that came up about whether 154 games or 162 games, you know, does the record count, does it not? And when they put the asterisk next to it, it really brought it into focus. So somewhere he gets to grin about that and lean over and tell the Babe, hey, you want another hot dog? Because, you know, we were always boys. That's how I took care of you back in the day.
Right. Well, and the stress of all of that, Roger Maris, his hair was falling out in clumps during that year. He hit 61 home runs. It's kind of like Ziggy in real life now. Just step out of the shower. Gee, what's all that by the drain? Oh, no.
but can you imagine having a season, right? You know, and for anyone who's listening to us, forget whether it's sports. Can you imagine having the best year of your life for whatever reason, right? Whether you're in love, your job's coming through the right way, your family's doing incredible things, whatever it is, right? Having the best year of your life and just getting roundly criticized for having the best year of your life. Roger Maris's biggest crime was he wasn't Babe Ruth. That was it.
That was all it was.
Yep. He wasn't Babe Ruth. And people lost their mind. And the poor guy's hitting 61 home runs. His hair's falling into the drain. And he's looking in the mirror going, how did we get here?
Yeah,
I'm hitting home runs, which means I'm helping my team win, which means fans should be happy. But because I'm not the Babe, they're ticked off. That had to be a very strange time. And obviously, that does not help with your life longevity. That's for sure.
With Charles Davis. So you were in Kansas City last week.
Yes.
Vegas put up 40 on Kansas City, which is kind of what you have to do if you're going to beat the Chiefs, and beat them by 8 points, 40-32. Kansas City pivots off of that loss and signs Le'Veon Bell after he is released by the New York Jets. And you think to yourself, well, they need another offensive weapon. What is your assessment of what you saw last week in Kansas City, and then your assessment of Le'Veon Bell landing in the Midwest?
Well, number one, Kansas City, there should be zero panic about a regular season loss. If you think about their schedule and how they started the season, you know, you're the defending champs. It's a crazy time for all of us in this world. You open at home on a Thursday night because you are the defending champs. You get that honor. And here comes Houston, the team that thinks they're going to press you. You jump on them. Right. In the course of this season so far, they went to Baltimore, which was the showdown of the young NFL season. They blew away Baltimore. They come home. Here comes New England. Now, unfortunately, they had to go through all the COVID and what have you. Cam doesn't play, but still, it's New England. And they jump on New England and beat them. It's almost a natural to get a letdown in there somewhere. And they've owned the Raiders. You know, going into that game, they'd won 12 of the last 14 against them. you know, had blown them away as well. So a letdown to an extent was natural. But this is a different Raiders team as well. I think this is the team with potential to be pretty darn good, maybe a little bit ahead of schedule right now, and they played the game of their lives. And in the second half of that game, think about it now. It's 24-24 at the half. They held them to that one score. That was pretty impressive. Now, again, zero panic. I don't expect anyone to think that Kansas City is just going to go south now. Adding Le'Veon Bell looks on paper like a significant move to help out your young runner, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He's a rookie. You worry about rookie wall, how many touches. Now you get this, the great complimentary guy who could be better than complimentary. The one thing you keep an eye on as an administration is Le'Veon Bell being the Le'Veon Bell we've seen over the last 3 or 4 years, which is a pain in the backside. Okay? I mean, the juvenile way of getting out of New York, all right, you start liking comments directed at your coach that are negative or directed at your team that are negative. How old are you? Okay? Just stop it. All right? But now he ends up landing in a better place, a better situation because they're winning. You expect him to act right. And if he acts right and plays right, it's a big move for Kansas City. So I don't see any downside for KC because I do believe Brett Veach, their GM, Andy Reid, their head coach, they're similar to Bill Belichick in this way. We'll bring you in if you've had issues elsewhere, if we think you can help us, but we're also not afraid to get rid of you if you become a pain in the butt. And I think that's where Kansas City is with Le'Veon Bell. And if he acts right and plays well, fantastic move. And again, another weapon. And they're still, to me, the decided favorites coming out of the AFC West. I know that Las Vegas beat them, but I don't think anyone thinks that Las Vegas is a better team than Kansas City, but they were better on Sunday. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. I got to see it myself.
I want to ask you about Canadian Chase Claypool in Pittsburgh. Four touchdowns last week. Yeah, I don't want to miss this. How is this just a fluke one game, or have they found something here?
No, they have found something. And you know, it's one of those things where the rest of the world's catching up now, but the football world knew beforehand. Remember, he was a second-round pick. So it's not like people didn't know that he could play. He was at the Senior Bowl in Mobile last year, and I'm fortunate enough to go to that most every year. So I got to watch him practice all week. This kid had a terrific week of practice to go along with a terrific career, especially his senior year at Notre Dame. So you saw the development already there. And when you ask the Pittsburgh people what impressed you most about him, it's not his receiving skills. It's not his size. They talked about watching him all week at the Senior Bowl be the first one in drills. And then when it came time for special teams, go and participate enthusiastically. You know, you've seen him with Pittsburgh as a gunner and first guy downfield, making tackles, making plays, blocking drills. He would still line up first, not just when it was time to go catch passes. They loved his overall makeup. And then they watched how he interacted, how he studied, how he did things in meetings. These are the things that you see in a week's time at these all-star games that coaches and teams really lock in on. Not to mention 6'4", 238, and running, you know, somewhere around 4'4". That doesn't hurt either. And his best football is truly going to be ahead of him. I mean, it truly is. I love the story, and I'll stop here. It's one of my favorite stories about him. You guys have probably heard it. That when Notre Dame, you know, he sent out the tape to try and get interest because people just didn't know. They didn't find him up there, right? And he hears from Notre Dame, like, hey, we're interested. He asked his high school coach if Notre Dame was good at football. like, do they like football? What? Because he just wasn't locked in on it, wasn't versed in it yet. He didn't know the American game that well. But guy averaged 51 points a game in basketball in high school. He's beyond an athlete. He's fit in well. He's not a one game flash in the pan. Now you're not going to get four touchdowns every game. Who does? But he is a significant player already as a rookie in the NFL.
Charles, I have more than one friend who needs to hear that clip. More than one Notre Dame fan that I know who needs to hear that clip. I'm going to have Silent Vic cut that MP3 and I'm going to email it to all my Notre Dame friends.
Is that not one of the great things, though? Because we all lock in, think in our world, we all lock in and think, you know, everybody knows what we know and knows that, you know, who the significant teams, who the players and all that. It's just not true. I was out walking my dogs the other day and I met this woman. She was really, really nice with her dog and the whole thing. And she said, oh, yeah, you're Lisa's husband. I met your wife. Oh, yeah, yeah, nice to meet you, blah, blah. She goes, I understand you do something with sports. She goes, I know nothing about sports, so I'm sorry. We can't have that conversation. I was on the floor. I was like, yeah, this guy said, I said, ma'am, it's not a prerequisite. You know, we can talk about other things. We're good.
With Charles Davis of the NFL on CBS, and this changes the mood just a little bit, Charles. There's breaking news. Adam Schefter, among others, tweeting this out. The Indianapolis Colts have shut down their facilities because, quote, several individuals within our organization have tested positive for COVID-19. Now, Indianapolis is supposed to host Cincinnati at 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. So if you've got a bunch of positive tests being announced on Friday, that means that they likely were taken Thursday. Sunday's game, I mean, I can't see that happening now.
It certainly would appear to be in jeopardy, right? I mean, we've seen this already throughout, and you just pointed out very well, it's a time frame. Now, how much time do you have, what have you, plus the numbers. And the next thing is going to be, who are the people in the organization? So I'm not going to leap to total conclusions yet. We've got to find that part out. But what was interesting to me is, you know, we had this in Kansas City last week. All right. So there was someone from Kansas City's organization that tested positive. And I think this was like Thursday, Friday. I think it might have been Friday. And everybody's like, oh, boy, what's going to happen? It turned out he was in the strength and conditioning staff. They did the contact tracing because, you know, they're all wearing the thing on their wrists. You know, no one else was quote unquote in that type of contact, yada, yada. They did the extra testing and the game went forward. So let's see what happens here with Indianapolis. But you're right. It's something to be considered. And right now I'm already looking at Monday, which is already becoming a very stacked Monday. Well, you know, we've had doubleheaders on Monday. That's how we start every season, right? There's a doubleheader on ESPN with Monday Night Football. Now we're adding these games. We were supposed to have two Monday night games this week, or I think, and then something changed on that. Last week we had a Tuesday night game. I just talked with someone from another organization yesterday, and they said, God, every time we say we've got to be flexible and adapt, I just hope people don't start taking it as something being trite. That is truly going to be what this season is going to be about. Because we just don't know how it's going to play out. Will they play? Won't they play? Do they have to move this? Do they not have to move that? We just all have to be ready for it. And you're exactly right. This game's in jeopardy in terms of timing. Now let's find out who the people are in the organization and see if indeed that's going to put a significant number of other players in that position where they may have to delay things from Sunday.
With Charles Davis of the NFL on CBS, we're tight on time. There's two bullet point topics I want to touch on with you. Both deserve a lot longer than we're going to be able to give them here, Charles, but we'd be remiss if we didn't bring them up. Dak Prescott. So I'm not going to ask you to play doctor, but as I think of, as I think of serious injuries that have happened to people, Joe Theismann with the compound fracture in the mid 80s, the bone on the field, he was in an age where his career was coming to an end anyway. Alex Smith, man, I love Alex Smith from his days with the 49ers. I was nervous for him watching him last week, especially as his offensive line, the pocket was collapsing seemingly every second play. That was a very serious injury. He came back. Drew Brees was different because it was the shoulder, but the Chargers gave up on him. The Dolphins took a pass. He ended up in New Orleans. That went okay. He was a much younger man, of course. Do you worry that Dak will never be the same?
You always worry when you see that type of an injury because of the leg and the mobility. But you've pointed out very well, he has a few things in his favor. Youth, vitality, the ability to heal, all those things. Plus, we're at a much better place every single year with medical science, aren't we?
Yes.
You know, I mean, let's face it, every year it gets better. Plus, he can devote full time to rehab. He's not having to go to another job where you're trying to rehab your injury and do your other job, right? His job is to rehab that injury. So I'm bullish about his opportunity to come back and be a player in the league again, as opposed to I would have been like Theismann's time and his age. That's a great analogy there.
All right. And lastly, circling back to Pittsburgh, we talked a little Chase Claypool. Cleveland at 4-1 visits their longtime and most hated rival Pittsburgh at 4-0, 1 o'clock Sunday. This feels like one of those litmus tests for the Browns. Are you for real 4-1? If they go to Pittsburgh and win 5-1 and all of a sudden we're really talking, if they lose but it's respectable, they're still legit, right? Do you believe in the Browns?
I do, and I believed in them prior to the season because I've liked the roster for the last couple of years. But you can go and find my quote from the last couple of years as well. I wasn't bullish on them at all last year, which is one of my favorite words this morning, because I didn't think they had the right leadership. Okay, I didn't think that they had a person who could handle, and when I say handle, who could coordinate all those personalities that they had, and all those personalities were breaking out left and right because of the hype machine. Baker Mayfield has his personality. OBJ has his personality, right? You know, Miles Garrett, they were going crazy. Hey, we're going to the Super Bowl. And I was like, you guys aren't ready for that yet. You haven't got to the playoffs yet. I was right about that one. When they hired Kevin Stefanski, Andrew Berry as the GM, I felt much better about leadership in that with that franchise. And I was bullish on them. Even after the opener, when they got blasted by Baltimore, I walked out of there and I said, this is a good roster. They're going to be okay as they build. I think they built quicker than I expected. I'm with you. I shouldn't say I'm with you. I'm just saying I think this is a good team. I think they're going to play well on Sunday. And the best part about this game, it's got such good vibe going into it because both these teams look to be good teams that we're not even talking Miles Garrett, Mason Rudolph, helmet, anything else. We're just talking football. And I love the fact that we have that. And last thing I'll ask you, are you guys buying Chase Claypool's American nickname of Mapletron, or is there something that we can come up with that's better for him?
We need something different.
That's what people are going with now. People are going with Mapletron to coordinate him with Megatron. So yeah. I just wanted to know what you think of that.
Little homage to Charles Johnson. I think that if Chase Claypool carves out a career like Charles Johnson had, Megatron had, I think he'll be okay with himself. But Kelvin Johnson, Charles Johnson, God, baseball, Kelvin Johnson. Thank you.
Calvin Johnson, yeah, Megatron here, and now they're going with Mapletron with him in the short amount of time, and I think that's kind of – I thought it was kind of cool. I just wanted to see what you guys thought.
Yeah, Mapletron, well, you know what we'll do? We'll workshop it. We'll workshop it.
Yeah, workshop it, and get back to me and let me know, okay?
We'll exchange some emails.
I want to know what the right thing is.
Yeah, we'll exchange some emails, kick it up to corporate, and we'll see where we go with that. Charles, I won't call you Calvin. I'll call you Charles. Thanks,
all right,
pal.
I'll take it.
Always good to
hear
your voice. Charles Davis of the NFL on CBS. All right, Steve Rapp now from Sports Interaction and one of the hosts of Inside the Line Sunday mornings at 10 o'clock right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan for his three leadoff picks, NFL Week 6. Always good to hear your voice, Steve. Detroit at Jacksonville is your first selection. The Lions, a field goal favorite on the road.
Yeah, good morning, Scott. Two dead man walking coaches here go head-to-head. But I think since these organizations, one of these organizations don't think they could win, that's the Giants at Lions. They have more talent than the Jaguars. I'm going to lay the points. This line, as you said, has been -3 all week with the public on the road Lions. But books so far have been hesitant to move this to 3.5 in fear of sharps waiting in the wings. These are 2 1-win teams, but the schedules they've faced have been very different. The Lions have faced opponents who have gone 11-5, while Jacksonville's competition has been less than stellar at 6-12-1. Detroit is also coming off a bye. Since 2003, road favorites off a bye have hit 69%. And the road favorite doesn't scare me, as road teams are 42-35 against the spread this season. Matt Stafford has a history of going on some hot runs. Coming back rested here, this should be a great place to get started. I am laying -3 here. And I talked about it a little bit on the Thursday mini Inside the Line show. Find the road dog that you like and bet it on the money line. This one isn't one of those, but that has been the way to go to make some money in the NFL this year.
Green Bay at Tampa, Rodgers versus Brady, one of the biggest games this weekend. The line's been moving. Who do you got?
I will tell you in a second, Mike. Did you hit that pitch 90 miles an hour?
I actually hit 101.
He did, Steve. He not only did he hit 90, he hit 101 miles an hour. I can't make this up.
Up the middle or off the end of the bat, back into the stand? Did he hit it up the middle?
Couple line drives.
He had a couple of line drives.
I am impressed.
They weren't dribblers.
At my age, I pull a hammy walking into the batting cage. So very good for you. The Green Bay at Tampa Bay. This game, everybody will be watching in the late afternoon window, guys. As the other game at 4 o'clock is Dolphins Jets. So the Bucks open at Sports Interaction as a 2.5-point favorite. We've had dueling wise guys on this one. This number has been as high as Pac 2.5. It's now sitting Green Bay -1. It moved overnight. This one goes by form for me. Only one of these future Hall of Famers is playing at MVP levels this year, and it's Rodgers, not Brady. Rodgers on the roll. The Packs are 4-0. Their games have not been even close for the most part. They do play a good Bucks defense, but that they've only been tested by the lower echelons of the QB class and a clearly less than frisky Drew Brees. Rodgers is on a different level right now. This is a different task. Let's also not forget how good Rodgers has been for bettors in his career. He's 113-78-5 against the spread in his career. The most profitable QB ever coming off a bye week, 8-2-1 against the spread since 2008. As I mentioned, home field advantage means nothing. This is basically a pick 'em game on a neutral field at that price. I'm going to take the hot hand. It's now Green Bay -1.
And we got on Monday, it's now a doubleheader with Kansas City and Buffalo playing early. The actual Monday night scheduled game, Arizona at Dallas, the Cardinals favored by 1.5, of course, no Dak.
I hope you guys are ready for week 24 in the NFL, because that might be where we're heading. I'm going to look for a rally around the Dak effort here from the Cowboys in a line that was overcompensated for the injury and has been brought back since. The look-ahead line for this game, guys, prior to Sunday afternoon was Cowboys -3. After the Dak injury, this game reopened Arizona -3. That's given Dak a 6-point value over Andy Dalton. To me, that's ridiculous. While the public has been enamored with the Cardinals for several weeks now, the sharp saw the value in this line. It's now Cards -1.5. I mean, how much is a drop off to Dalton really to me? I mean, he's had weapons before. He's won in this league before. We know he's healthy and rested. And I'm not sure about all this Arizona love, especially playing their third straight on the road while Dallas is playing their third straight at home. The Arizona wins against the 49ers, Washington, and Jets. They've lost to Carolina and Detroit. Not worthy of favorites here. And a little bit of trend for those interested. Since 2003, only 31 teams have started 0-5 against the spread. Like Dallas has, those teams have gone 22-9 against the spread, 71%, and 19-6 at 76% when getting points. I'm taking the boys +1.5. And I was going to go against the Niners, but I feel bad always going against Scotty's Niners. So I haven't done that the last couple of weeks.
Thank you, Steve, for that. I have no idea how they're going to block Aaron Donald on Sunday night, but this is where we're at. We appreciate it. Steve Rapp of Sports Interaction and one of the hosts of Inside the Lines, 10 o'clock Sunday mornings on Sportsnet 590. The Fan getting you set for all of the action in the NFL, and we have hit week 6. 8 o'clock hour, Elliot Friedman on the possibility of a Canadian division. Brendan Gallagher re-upping in Montreal. Joe Thornton to Switzerland. What's his next move after that? So much more. Dan Schulman at 8:30. Ziggy in the 90-mile-an-hour fastball, and I've got a bet. A MacArthur always pays his debts. Got to discuss that next. All right, we're getting texts to 590-590 from listeners just jumping in on the show right now, wondering if Ziggy hit 90 miles per hour at the batting cage yesterday. And our thanks once again to our friends at the Dugout at 62 Buttermill Avenue in Concord. So that's in the 400 and Highway 7 area.
Great spot. They have everything there. They have, you want 101, they've got it. If you want to start out with the T-ball,
they got
it. What do you call that thing?
The tee.
The tee holder.
Hit off the tee. Hit off the
ball
tee.
Holder. Yeah. Okay. They've got those two. If you don't want to hit a 101.
You bet. But Jason Booth, Kyle McKay running a great business up there. And in normal times, they do kids' birthday parties. They do individual training. They do team training. Bunch of different types of clinics. The Dugout up in Concord. I was going to say Vaughn, but apparently
It's Concord.
It's Concord.
Yeah, they're different. That's the city above the city above the city.
Concord is above the city of Toronto?
What's
Concord
Vaughan?
Is north of Vaughan? Well, see, we weren't that far from Canada's Wonderland. We weren't that far from Vaughan Mills. So I just thought we were in Vaughan, but apparently we were in Concord. You hit 90 miles an hour, Ziggy. I knew I was screwed on the first pitch. I knew I was screwed on the first pitch.
I got a piece of like the first one.
You were on
it. And like I got a little bit more. Then I got a little bit more. And then I went yard.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe it was a single.
Okay, you would have dunked it over a Jose Altuve, a 5'2" second baseman. DJ LeMahieu, 6'5"-ish. Oh, I might have been able to leap and catch that one. But I'm not going to take it away from you. It was solid contact on 101 miles an hour.
Anything towards Altuve is good, isn't it?
See, yes. Yeah. You can ground out to Altuve these days. You'd be saving first. Yeah. Got a little bit of the Steve Sachs going on there. The Chuck Knobloch going
on. But yeah, I hit a good one outright, and then I hit my best one, I think my best one was 101 up the middle. Like, I didn't feel it leave the bat. That's when you know you hit it well.
That's right. That's right.
Because some of them, I literally thought I broke my hand. Like, you broke the bat. I thought I broke my hand. And then I hit the one up the middle, like line drive. And I didn't feel it release or anything. It was like air.
Yeah. And Kevin Barker was saying that the reason our hands hurt today is because we were rolling over our wrists, making contact. So he says, if we get that out of our game, one, our hands won't hurt and swell up the way that they have. And secondly, we'll make better contact. So, you know, it's funny. Kevin and I were texting last night, and he said the performance that you guys put on today, now yesterday, he said with a couple of weeks of practice, you'd be hitting line drives all over the place. So I'm wondering if we've got to up the ante next spring. Maybe we can
up the ante.
We got to up the ante. Like, well, not just go and
what else
hope.
Do you want me to do?
No. Us, all of us. I got around on 92 yesterday. I beat it into the turf. It was a chopper to the third baseman.
I hit it.
So I think with a couple of weeks of practice, we should up the ante on this.
What else you got
next spring? I don't know. Like, do we start charting hits to the outfield? Do we come up with some kind of home run derby? I don't know.
Rogers Center home run derby.
There's no way the Blue Jays. Yes. There's no way the Blue Jays will let us anywhere near that place. Nowhere.
You're trying to tell me
that
if
place.
You show them the footage of yesterday, they're not going to invite us out?
Well, should we send Ross Atkins? Because there's a ton of footage in Sportsnet's.
I am. I'm going to put together a little reel. That's what people do, right? You put together your reel
Sportsnet's,
and you send it in.
Sportsnet's digital is, and we're going to break this down over a five-day period next week. There's some preview stuff up on social media at Fan590, both Twitter and Instagram, at Scotty Mac Thinks, at Mike Zigomanis. So there's some preview stuff, but Monday to Friday next week, each day, there will be more released leading up to you swinging at 90 miles per hour. Maybe we should send that footage to the Blue Jays front office. You're not 40 yet. You will be 40 by next season, but you're not 40 yet. Maybe the fact your age starts with a 3.
I got some years
left in
me.
Could get you a deal. Could get you a deal.
You never know.
I mean, Joe Thornton wants to play in the NHL. He's 41.
I could DH if they don't want to put me in the field. Is there a DH tryout? No? When are tryouts?
Is there a DH tryout?
Yeah.
I believe they have somebody 20 years younger than you who is slotted to be a DH more often than not.
All right.
Could you imagine? Could you imagine Biggio, Bichette, Guerrero, Zigomanis? 1, 2, 3, 4 in the lineup. Biggio, Bichette, Guerrero, Zigomanis. And Teoscar hitting behind you offering you protection.
There you go. No, on the taking it to the next level, though, going to do a home run derby. I've had a couple chances to do batting practice, and I never did it. And I would love an invite back. Even if we just got the park and we're allowed to go in there and hit a couple, it would be awesome.
It'd be awesome. We'll start begging now. Start begging now.
Let's get the ball in motion.
By the way, Concord is Vaughn. We're now getting blitzed with text to 590-590. Oh. So in the same way Etobicoke?
Agent Court's in Scarborough.
That's right. The same way Etobicoke is part of Toronto, there was, I guess, some amalgamation way back. And so Concord and Concord is a part of Vaughn. So I have to now pony up.
Oh, yes. Sammy at UFT messaged me last night.
I have to stand in and stop pucks. Now, I'm getting love here. You've got great hand-eye coordination. People are now pumping my tires saying you got around on 92. You've got great hand-eye coordination. You're going to make a big glove save. I'm going to flash the Felix Potvin. I'm going to be Felix Potvin circa 1993 after Fuhr was traded to Buffalo, the rookie goalie who steps in and plays big when it counts. I'm feeling good about that.
If I get 10 pucks from the hash marks, you won't stop one. If I got 10 from the blue line,
I'll trip over myself. Yeah,
I'm going to miss the net on two of them. You might get in the way of two of them. I say I get 6 or 7 out of 10 from the blue line. Standing still, not moving, nothing.
You said not one timing, just winding up.
Just sitting there. Yeah. Not being able to come in.
Are you slapping? Are you snapping?
Yeah, of course it's going to be a slap shot from the blue line. It's not like I'm in the hash marks. You can take that on. come on. Like, you're making it sound like I almost broke my hand in the batting cages. Okay. You're taking slap shots for sure.
Okay, here's
like
one.
My hand is so sore today, I can't wait to just rifle heaters right by your ears.
Okay, so
I'm telling you.
Okay, here's one, though, because we'll do a bunch of different marker points. Can I stop 10 out of 10 slap shots from center ice? You wind up from center ice. Can I stop 10 out of 10 from there?
One's going to get by you. Center ice is far away. Like, hitting the net would be a challenge from center.
Yeah,
but for me, it's been a while. It wouldn't be that easy from center. Like, I think one getting by you might happen. Two would be bad for you. Even if you've never played, you should be able to, like, kind of get in the way from red line.
Right.
But from the hash mark, you're not stopping one. And the blue line, you're not stopping. You're not even stopping half of them.
You have no chance.
Yeah, you have zero chance. And we're going to make it. Well, U Sports canceled all the leagues yesterday.
I know they did. But we're going to do this.
We can get in there.
It'll be COVID compliant and all of that. We're going to do it.
Your equipment will be waiting in a room. And then I would just see you on the, like, no one would come near you. You'd have your own room. You would just get dressed, and then, like, I'd meet you from the other side.
Excellent. Diva treatment. That's what I want.
But they're ready for you.
If I'm going to do this, I need my own dressing room. And I want it sanitized.
Where was my dressing room yesterday? And, I mean, I didn't even have a parking spot.
You would have had a parking spot if you'd opened your eyes and seen that there was parking at the side of the building.
As long as Hugh Burrell's got a parking spot right up front, that's all that matters, right?
That's all that matters. Okay, so we'll get on the ice and do this at an appropriate time soon, and we'll be COVID compliant and take good care. I can't wait. All I want is one glove save. All I want is to flash the leather.
You might not be able to stand up. How funny was that? Sammy at the UFT said, "What size chair do you want to go on the ice?"
I can skate. Like, I can skate.
Yeah, I can swing a bat. Doesn't mean I'm going to hit a 90-mile-an-hour pitch.
Well, you did. You and only Jeff Blair believed in you. Good for you. It should be good. Now I'm starting to pout Because I'm actually picturing the pucks whizzing by the side of my head.
I won't hit you. Don't worry. They'll all go in. Like, I'll make sure.
Don't worry. They'll all go in.
I'll make sure and I won't hit you. I mean, I'll hit you with a couple just to get you back for the way my hands feel right now. But after that, they won't touch you.
All right. Well, we're going to continue. I like this. We got some love on Twitter from, I got to scroll here now because we got a bunch of responses. Simon definitely made my day. I'd love you and Scotty. So he's writing to you. I'd love you and Scotty to do more things like this. Golf drives, putting challenges, 3-point shots.
Ooh, basketball would be good
I'm not making any bets with you on golf. I'll go and golf, but I'm not making bets because I know you're going to wax me on that. But yeah, we could play a game of horse. We could
play a
game of 21. We could do something.
Let's do it. We got a lot.
We could do something. All right, we'll come up with, we'll get creative here. We'll get creative. Dan Shulman, Elliot Friedman next hour. Busy, busy weekend with a bunch of prime NFL matchups. Hugh's going to jump in, and we'll talk about what we plan to watch. What you watching next? I have to say, for what you're watching this weekend, you are not allowed to pick the Washington football team at the New York Giants.
Come on, that's going to be the highlight of so many people's week.
Well, it could be a Washington win, though. I mean, that's...
Oof. Is it the 1-4 versus 0-5? Well, somebody's got to win.
Draft position, baby.
Knowing those two teams, that's going to end in like a 6-6 tie. Or something.
You know what it doesn't look like we'll be watching? Cincinnati and Indianapolis, the Colts facility closing today because of positive COVID tests.
Yeah.
Yikes.
No official word yet on what happens to that game, but I don't know. Yeah, you got to think that they may, at the very least, push it back to Monday. There's already two games on Monday, including the Bills and the Chiefs. By the way, Le'Veon Bell will not play for the Chiefs this Monday. He's got to go through his 5 days of testing before he can join his teammates.
Is it a stupid take that I had earlier this week?
Yep.
That, okay. All righty then. Okay, so that's excellent. Elliot Friedman coming up. That the Bills would beat Kansas City?
No, not at all.
Well, except that it would be back-to-back losses for Kansas City, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean...
I think the Bills bounce back. I don't know.
So do I. So what's the spread in that game? 4? Chiefs? Chiefs by 4?
So, yeah.
I like that. Packers and Bucks. Who you got?
Green Bay.
Yeah, I think
Green Bay.
Aaron Rodgers is a man possessed.
By the way, it does not make me happy to say that, but I do think Green Bay wins that game.
You know, the old Aaron Rodgers who doesn't have anything left. That guy? The guy who's probably going to win MVP this year? Yeah, that guy?
That Green Bay Packers team that did not draft anybody to support him?
Yeah.
Offensively, instead drafted his heir apparent. Yeah.
Yeah.
One first rounder skilled position.
Yeah. The guy that they did draft was his heir apparent, who he wasn't happy about that. Remember, he said he poured himself 4 fingers and sat by himself for a while after that. Browns and Steelers.
I'm watching this interesting
matchup. Yes. Chase Claypool and Silent Vic and I were talking because we heard you guys talking about the Mapletron nickname. Not a big fan of that. You were talking with Charles Davis about the Mapletron nickname for Chase Claypool.
Yeah, it's a play on Megatron.
Yeah, I'm giving that one a no.
Yeah,
a
we
hard
didn't like
no.
it. So here's what Silent Vic and I came up with.
Oh, no.
Think about this now.
Oh, no.
The A-Train, but the A is E-H because he's Canadian.
Ooh.
Yeah, see?
Can now do that. That one
it's not
is...
not bad, right?
That's pretty good.
Again, we'll kick it up to corporate.
I'll go with that. No,
it's
I'm
not
in.
Bad. It's
well,
not
I'll
bad.
Sign off on that. I'll sign off on that now.
Chase Claypool is my favorite player now because before he went to Notre Dame, he didn't know they were good at football.
Oh yeah.
That's my favorite thing ever.
And I think
that's
you know
something I would ask.
Who I think I know who you're going to send that to. By the way,
Sean Fitzgerald.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Sean Fitzgerald.
I mean, to say that he's a Notre Dame fan would be an insult to Notre Dame fans.
That would be an understatement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys are boxing fans or not, and I hope you are because it's the sweet science. It's the purest of all sport. There is a lightweight unification bout this weekend, and it has the potential to be the fight of the year.
Teofimo Lopez taking on Vasily Lomachenko. Lomachenko, by the way, is the number two ranked pound-for-pound boxer in the world. These guys absolutely despise each other, so it's a grudge match. Best part about it, it's free. Saturday night, free.
You going to be watching?
Yeah, I'm going to tune into this for sure. Yeah, okay. I love the boxing.
How about the PGA Tour this weekend?
Yeah, the CJ Cup in Vegas, baby. Hey, Ziggy, Tyrrell Hatton got all that clap back for wearing a hoodie at the BMW Championship in Europe. How do you feel about hoodies on the golf course, real quick?
Hoodies on the golf course?
Like while playing a round of professional golf. The whole dress
code. If the weather's bad and it's an actual raincoat, I'm okay with it, right? Because you can't have your caddy hold your umbrella over you while you're swinging, right? Once you address a ball, you can't have anything near you. So if that helps you protect against the elements, I'm okay. But if it's like something to keep you warm, I don't know, put a toque on.
Ziggy wears a hoodie everywhere.
This is true.
The PGA Tour, those playing Sherwood Country Club this weekend, which I've played a couple times.
Of course you have. Yep.
And let me tell you, it is spectacular.
It's real. And it's spectacular. Dan Schulman coming up at 8:30. Elliot Friedman on Alex Petrangelo to Vegas, on Brendan Gallagher re-upping with Montreal after a bit of a miscommunication. Joe Thornton and the Leafs. Well, Thornton's playing for HC Davos for the time being as the NHL is into its offseason. And the notion of an all-Canadian division. Give it to us. Give it to us every year for the rest of forever. Elliot Friedman on all that next. So, Ziggy, before we get to Elliot Friedman, you wanted to jump in?
Oh, just that last comment. So it's Shadow this week, Sherwood next week. Played both.
Okay.
Awesome.
All right.
Shadow is like this weekend in Vegas is in the middle of the desert, but there's like 3,000 replanted trees and they put a creek in and they have like lakes and you have no idea you're in the middle of the desert. It's like quite the experience. And then next week's at Sherwood outside of LA.
All right. Well, that's a very minor mistake on your part compared to how I queued up Elliot Friedman before the commercial break. Elliot Friedman, all that.
That's not too bad.
Elliot Friedman on all of that next instead came out like this. Elliot Friedman on all that.
That's a Friday. That's a Friday finisher right
yeah,
there.
That's,
no?
Well, that could,
that happens.
It could be.
Well, you're a little taxed after yesterday. You had to drive all the way out to the city above the city. You had to hit balls. You had to watch me hit balls. It was a bit of a production. And yet you didn't get your nap time.
I think it's the town within the city above Toronto, Concord, city of Vaughan. So, you know, Jeff Blair was the only baseball guy who believed in you.
Yep.
Right? You know, Kevin Barker, not necessarily Tim Leeper. We had a lot of people on. Should I start asking the hockey guys if they think I'll be able to stop a slap shot?
Yes, we should.
From the blue line.
From the blue line.
That you slap take shot. On me. Because this is my payoff. You hit 90 miles an hour yesterday, so now I've got to throw on the goalie gear head to toe and take shots from you and a couple of your U of T players. Elliot Friedman is with us. Elliot, if Ziggy winds up, not a one-timer, puck sitting there in front of him, if he winds up 10 times from the blue line, how many, and all 10 are on net.
Okay.
How many could I stop?
See, that was my first question is, if he misses the net, does it count as a save?
There you go. I'm missing the net.
Well, you want me to stop the ones going wide?
Yeah, thanks, Barrasso.
This is, whenever I hear stories like this, I think of Kelly Rudy. Kelly Rudy tells a story, and it was one of my favorite Kelly Rudy stories, about he went to do a game on Hockey Night in Canada once on site in Edmonton. And there was a media person there who shall remain nameless, who said to Kelly, I could score on you on a breakaway. Now, Kelly is as nice as it gets, except when someone questions his competitive juices or someone makes a statement that he really disagrees with like that, because he's a very competitive guy. I underestimated how competitive he was. And Kelly laughed in his face. He said, you could never score on me on a breakaway. And so, and I think if it had ever gotten to it, he would have made the 10 saves just to prove a point. Like, he wasn't letting one in just to let the guy feel good. He was going 10 for 10. Now, we all know that Kelly is a big jerk compared to Mike. So my bet, Mike, is that although you would blast the first couple by him just to make sure everybody knew who was boss here, I think you as a person would ease up on one and, or maybe aim for the shoulder, like just under the collarbone. So even if Scott saves one, he's going to feel it.
I let Scotty know today, I am going to let a couple rip by his ears. I can't feel my hands this morning after hitting between 90 and 101 mile an hour pitches yesterday. I would have rather take a slap shot off my ankles than have a feeling like I did when you hit a baseball with a wooden bat, not in the sweet spot.
Especially if it's cold.
I'm telling you, it was the worst feeling ever. I'd rather a 100-mile slap shot off my ankle than to hit a baseball not in the sweet spot.
Yeah,
that's nuts.
All right, let's talk about actual business at hand here, Elliot, because there is a lot of it.
Okay.
Bill Foley, this is my lead. Like, Thornton will get to and all that, but this is my lead because I now can't get this idea out of my head, and I'm going to be disappointed if it doesn't happen. Bill Foley mm-hmm. goes on a Las Vegas radio station, and not once, but multiple times in the same interview, drops this idea of an all-Canadian division in the NHL next year because COVID restrictions are going to cause border crossing difficulties and all of that stuff. Do you think this happens?
I think it depends on the border. It's on the table. There's no question about it. See, initially, from what I heard, it was proposed and the league wasn't crazy about it. Then, as the shutdown continued longer and longer, they went back to it and said, you know, we have to at least prepare for it. So it's on the table. And by the way, thank God for Bill Foley. I'm sure the NHL isn't saying that, but I'm very happy with all these interviews he's giving because he's giving us stuff to talk about. But I do believe it's on the table. I believe it's a possibility. It just depends on the border, right? Some teams have kind of, it's one of the, but the other thing that's an issue here are there going to be temporary bubbles? So players aren't crazy about those. I think that they've indicated to teams that there could be some temporary in and out bubbles, but I've heard the players aren't really thrilled about a bubble for any length of time. So we'll see. But I do think the Canadian division is something that they're considering because of the situation with the border. Yes.
So if they did go to the Canadian division, would it be like the Leafs playing everybody in Canada for 3 weeks and then maybe 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, they go to a spot in the U.S. and play a bunch of teams and then kind of come back?
I don't think they'd cross the border. I think it would be a year. I'm betting it's going to be somewhere around between a 45 and 55 game season. I don't want to pick the exact number, maybe 60 games at most. And I think it would just be next year, Canada versus Canada. I'd be curious to know how they would do the playoffs. But I think we're talking all the Canadian teams play each other for 1 year. And, you know, if there's traveling involved and not a bubble,
then, you know, you go to Vancouver, you play them back-to-back. You go to Calgary, you play them back-to-back. You go to Edmonton, you play them back-to-back. You come home, go to Winnipeg, play them back-to-back. And then you come home and sort of do the same thing at home or with the Eastern teams. I think that's kind of what they're talking about if we're not doing bubbles.
What do you think they will want to have nailed down about the playoffs by the time the regular season starts, Elliot? Because I think outside of...
Well, they're going to have to know what the format is,
the
right?
The format and the seeding and all of that, but do they need to know whether, like, I'm going to use bubble as the example, because if American teams are playing Canadian teams in the playoffs, there might have to be some kind of bubble. Like, would the players, would the league be willing to bubble up specifically for the playoffs again, if that's what it took?
Yeah, I don't want to answer that question with a yes or no, because I don't know the answer. The only thing I know about it, Scott, is that the players have indicated they're really not crazy about the idea of bubbles, period. And not crazy might be me underselling it. I just have heard that they're against it and they've let it be known. Will we have to use some form of a bubble? Yes, it could happen. But I know the players' initial stance is that's not what they want.
With Elliot Friedman on leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
So, and also, Scotty, I should say, too, I believe that this key to next season is how many fans playoff teams can have in their buildings. And we don't know the answer to that yet. I do think that's a critical part of next year and a critical hope for the league.
So just to follow up on that, and he said a lot in his Financial Post interview, including predicting that his team would be Stanley Cup champs within 4 years. But Eugene Melnyk, he didn't unveil the plan. He just says that he has a plan to have 6,000 fans in Canadian Tire Center for Senators home games next year. Now, that would have to be approved and all that. I understand that.
Right.
But is that... I mean, are those types of conversations happening? Because I would imagine that the NHL is looking at the NFL, where Jerry Jones has got, 11,000 or 12,000 Cowboys fans in for home games. Now, jurisdictions are going to dictate all of this. But I would imagine that all of that stuff is on the table. We know that Eugene Melnyk can be prone to hyperbole, but... I mean, he wants fans in the stands. There's no question about it. I would imagine they're developing plans as best they can. Whether they get approved or not remains to be seen.
Yeah, I thought that was actually a good interview, too, that Melnyk gave. And I liked his line about 6,000 fans would be an improvement for us or whatever. I thought that was very funny. Some good owner interviews lately. Melnyk had a lot of interesting things to say in that one. And the thing, too, about Melnyk is, because of his history in pharmaceuticals, you'd think he'd actually have a clue about what he's talking about there. So I do think all the teams have modeled that out. One of the things in terms of, and I know last year there was a Board of Governors meeting on Zoom during all this, and I believe it was Ted Leonsis of Washington was explaining some things about how you get fans into the building and how long it might take fans to leave the building after a game. Like, this is all the stuff they're modeling. So, yes, I do think all these teams are doing this, looking at plans. What can we do? How can we do it? But all they are plans right now because, as you said, we just don't know. One of the things I've learned a lot about while reading up a bit more about COVID since the playoffs ended, Scott, is the question of ventilation. And as you mentioned, you know, there's a lot of these teams that are bringing fans, they're outdoor stadiums. Dallas is an exception. The Cowboys, they have a roof. So I know the league is studying that. I know they're going to look at what's happened in leagues overseas, but you know, with this thing with the SpinCo, the super spreader event in Hamilton, like, I'm a guy who's taken SpinCo classes before. I know it doesn't look like it, but trust me, I have. You know, they did everything right in terms of, you know, separation, cleaning, things like that. But there was a great article in The Atlantic about how a lot of this is about ventilation. And I think that's going to be an interesting question is, you know, are these arenas, if we do bring fans back in at some point, is the ventilation going to be good enough to keep the air as clean as possible? And I really do think that's going to be a huge key as to whether or not it's going to be possible for fans to be at indoor arenas.
Elliot Friedman with us on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So it makes total sense at 41 years old. Joe Thornton, his wife is Swiss. He has not played a competitive hockey game since March because San Jose was one of the seven worst teams in the NHL, so they didn't bubble up in Toronto or Edmonton. He needs to play if he's going to continue his NHL career. Is it an oversimplification, Elliot, to assume that he would not be putting himself through this for the sake of going back to San Jose to play for a Sharks team that a lot of people project to not be all that good? Is he playing with the intention of signing with a contender? Oh, I don't know. Say like the Maple Leafs. Or do we lack clarity on what his total agenda is at this point?
Well, I think it's oversimplifying it to say that yes, because one, the guy loves to play, and he has said before that when he was done in North America, he would play a year. He would want to play a year in Switzerland. So, I'm not surprised he's playing, and also for the reasons you said that they did have a feeling here, teams that were interested, that he would play because he hadn't played in that time. The full court press is on from the Maple Leafs. The GM has talked to him. The coach has talked to him. I believe Austin Matthews has talked to him. I believe Jake Muzzin has talked to him. I think Tavares has, and there might even be more. I just think they've all called him and told him that he'd be really welcome here. They'd find a way to make it work here. Second unit power play, offensive situations, still a really smart player, loves playing. They think he'd be just a fun person to have around. I kind of thought personally that when they re-signed Spezza, the idea of this was over. Obviously not. They're really making a pitch, and he's listening. Thornton is, although he's an intensely competitive guy, he's also, in away from the rink, he's much more laid back. So it's hard to tell what his timetable is for making a decision. The Sharks want him back, obviously, too. I do think that playing for a team that's got a Stanley Cup chance is very important to him. But he's very loyal to San Jose. His family knows San Jose well. And the other thing, too, is, and I don't know how much of a factor this is, Scott, but I suspect it wouldn't be insignificant. Marleau just re-signed there with a chance to break Gordie Howe's games played record. I don't know if or not. Would that be something that Thornton would consider meaningful enough that he'd want to be a part of? It was just something someone threw my way. So I do believe the Maple Leafs are making a pitch, and a serious one. This is not a lazy attempt at getting him. This is a real attempt at getting him. And I do think he's considering it. But I don't know which way he's leaning, and I also don't know what his timetable is.
How do you think it would work, though, Elliot? Like, I love Joe Thornton. I love what – I think he's still got a lot of game left in him. But from the guys I talk to that play with him, they say he's even better in the room. And that's kind of what I'm looking for the Toronto Maple Leafs and when you talk about adding things. But where are you going to fit Spezza in Thornton third and fourth line? That's where I'm confused. You're not going to play them together.
No, what I would wonder – like, Mike, this is just me talking out of my rear end. So I'm just, I would wonder if it almost becomes like a rotation with the two of them. Like if the schedule is as back-to-back heavy next year as we're expecting and teams are expecting, could you say, hey, one night it's Thornton, one night it's Spezza. Yeah. And then, depending on injury or what else happens, you go from there. Like that's just me one. That's just me thinking out loud. I wonder if it's something like that.
Elliot Friedman is with us on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It was, I don't know, kind of nice, but also weird to hear Mark Bergevin get emotional in describing Brendan Gallagher, the player. Can you, in a couple of minutes here, Elliot, chronologically take us through exactly what happened culminating in Gallagher signing long-term with the Habs? Because it felt like there was a glitch in the matrix there in the middle of the week, and then all of a sudden, boom, 6-year extension was announced.
Yeah, there definitely was a glitch in the matrix. I don't know if there were red pills or blue pills involved, but there was definitely a glitch in the matrix. So
what happened was they traded for Anderson. They signed him to an extension. And I don't know if, like, I don't know what the proper word is, but they'd been talking to Gallagher about an extension. And I heard and I wrote that day that it was similar to the Anderson extension, which it was, just one less year and a bit more money. And, you know, I think that Gallagher was a little bit, I don't know if miffed is the right word, but that he kind of thought that since his extension hadn't been agreed to, that it was off the table. And I believe it was conveyed to him through his agent that the Canadians, because of what they'd done in free agency or with trades, they weren't going to be able to budge off this offer. And I think, you know, you've seen him play. He's a passionate guy. He's emotional. He was disappointed and he was upset. And talks did break off. And, you know, once that got reported, and it got reported in a couple of places, I think that I don't know whether the owner got involved or was just Bergevin saying, it kind of reminded me a bit of the P.K. Subban when he went to arbitration. The Canadians made an offer right before arbitration. Subban turned them down. They had the hearing. And the next day before the verdict was rendered, Subban got his big deal, 8 times 9. And, you know, I don't know if it was just Bergevin saying, hey, let's sort this out here, or the owner got involved or what, but, you know, they picked up the phone, they called the agent, Jerry Johansson, and they just hashed it out. And they got it done. So it was definitely off the rails for, what, a few hours a day? And then they figured it out and sorted it out. But there was definitely a point where the talks broke off, and there was a point that Gallagher briefly thought that either he would be traded or he'd play out this year. Now, I know a bunch of teams called Bergevin, and he said he's not trading them, and, you know, he got it done. So it was off the rails, and it got put back on.
Good to hear your voice, pal. We'll look forward to talking to you next week, and enjoy your weekend.
When is this shooting exhibition taking place?
Because we just had the batting cage thing go down yesterday, so there's going to be some planning, and I might need to take some yoga and Pilates classes just to ensure, because the one thing I don't want to have happen here, Elliot, is to come out of this with a hernia.
That's probably a very good idea.
Right, so...
Although it might be more than that.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So we'll work our way up to it. It's going to happen soon. We got to respect COVID guidelines and all that. And I would imagine it'll happen sometime shortly after the weather really turns. It's going to happen soon.
Well, good luck, Scott. And
thank
I
you.
Know Mike is going to laugh. But I'll tell you this, those UT players who are a bit younger,
yeah,
those guys aren't going to go easy. Those are the ones you have to worry about, Scotty.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think they care at all. They're going to stand up for their coach. Thanks,
Those
Bill.
Are the predators, and you are the prey.
Yes. Take care, guys. Yeah, you bet. Thanks. Elliot Friedman of Hockey Night in Canada, the NHL on Sportsnet, and 31 Thoughts, the weekly column on sportsnet.ca and the podcast that he co-hosts with Jeff Merrick. Dan Schulman is calling the Rays and Astros ALCS for ESPN Radio. He's usually with us on a Wednesday. He will join us next to talk about baseball's playoffs. And, I mean, he's been down in Bristol, Connecticut in quarantine. Maybe he hasn't even heard about Ziggy's grand accomplishment yesterday.
He heard? It's the shot heard around the world.
Oh, my God.
Swing?
I don't think the reverberations have been felt outside of Concord yet. Dan Schulman coming up. I've been corrected on the text line. I said the reverberations of you hitting 101 miles per hour have not been felt yet outside of Concord Vaughan.
Mm-hmm.
They've been felt as far away as Peterborough. Not on the text line, 705.
Hey, I'm getting a lot of love right now.
Are
Thank you?
You,
everybody. Yeah, I appreciate it.
It's impressive stuff, I have to say.
I was a little surprised.
You know, and I wanted, even if you did it, I wanted to be able to come on the radio this morning and somehow chip away at the legitimacy of it. I can't even do that. I have to bow down.
I expected the whole show to go like this, and then the last 10 minutes, you guys all say, just kidding, that was kilometers per hour.
Dude, I stood in there. That was not 90 kilometers an hour. That was 90 miles an hour. That was some real, real stuff. I still think you need to take a piss test, though. I'm convinced you started a steroid cycle like 2 or 3 weeks ago. I need to know if any masking agents are running through your system right now. Dan Schulman is calling the Rays Astros ALCS, and suddenly we got a series as Carlos Correa walked it off. Yeah. First of all, I'm going to give you the floor, Dan, if you want. Now, there's no pressure, but if you want to throw some love Ziggy's way for making contact on a 101-mile-an-hour fastball off a pitching machine up at the dugout in Vaughn yesterday. I didn't think he could hit 90. He hit 101.
Wow. like hit it fair, fouled it off, eyes open, eyes closed? What are we dealing with?
He hit a line drive that I argue would have gone over a leaping Jose Altuve, but may have been snagged by a leaping DJ LeMahieu.
Wow. It's impressive. There's nothing to say, but that's impressive. And obviously Barker taught him, right? I saw a little thing on Twitter about it. Did Barker give you a hitting lesson?
Yeah, it was. I'm telling you, I'm not pumping his tires. It helped a lot. I had trouble hitting the ball on the tee. He came over, gave me a little 20-minute, where to put my hands, where to go down, related it to the hockey, slap shot, wrist shot, golfing, and it kind of made sense for me. And then he stood right behind me while I was taking the heat. So it was great. Oh. He wasn't there. I don't think I made contact with 90.
So he's not just full of hot air. There's actually substance.
It's legit.
To what he's saying, huh? Yeah. Wow.
But the one thing he wouldn't do is he wouldn't hit. That's what we wanted him to do. We wanted him to take a couple chucks.
Yeah.
I hope. Yeah. Do you have video for your own collection? Like, did somebody video this? Oh, you can show it to people.
Dan, the Sportsnet digital team came out. We are going to stagger over five days starting on Monday next week. There's some preview stuff up on our Twitter accounts right now, but we're actually going to stagger this thing out over 5 days next week starting on Monday. And it's the progression through what we experienced yesterday. It was a lot of fun. It was.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. And I think the next challenge for us is to stand in on a 95-mile-an-hour fastball where the machine could also flip an 86-mile-an-hour slider at us. That I think, is when it would get really, really difficult. So you got a series on your hands all of a sudden. Carlos Correa walks it off. The Astros win their final home game of the ALCS, and so Tampa Bay will play as the home team tonight, and then tomorrow, if need be, game six. Do you think that a little bit of doubt has crept into the Rays' heads here?
I don't think they're susceptible to that sort of thing. Now, I reserve the right to change my mind if Blake Snell gives up four in the first inning tonight, because it is a series now. It's starting to feel real. I think they still have a very strong self-belief. They have a very strong culture. You know, the interesting is the first three games, the scores don't reflect how close they were. If Jose Altuve doesn't get the yips, Houston might have won this series already. And then on the other side, Houston comes back and they win two games by the narrowest of margins. You know, the Rays get the tying run to third in the ninth inning of game four, and then Correa walks it off in game five. So I still think Tampa Bay has the upper hand. I still think they believe in themselves. Their bullpen is more rested, but ultimately the heavy lifting in this game, Scotty, goes to Blake Snell. He's got to be good and just put those relievers in a chance to do what they do.
Why do I want Houston to win? I don't like Dusty Baker.
That's got to be it.
I don't like them because of what happened, but like, I want them to go to the World Series. What is it about this team that it's like they cheat and people? I feel like I'm not the only
Arash
one.
Arash Madani is kind of gone over to the
what
really?
Is
Astros? Oh, read his Twitter. He's Yeah. He's not the only one either.
I muted him. I have to unmute him. So.
Packers-Vikings, right? Packers-Vikings.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, no, now's not the time to mute him, given how his team is doing and how my team is doing. I don't know. I can't help you with that one. I mean, I will tell you that, Dusty is the best. He just really is. And I've been fortunate enough to know him. The time I really got to know him well was when he was managing the Giants way back when, and they went to the World Series in 2002 against the Angels. And I just happened to be on the National League side all the way through the playoffs. And he's the coolest. He just is. And you pull for a guy like Dusty. Beyond that, I haven't heard many people saying I'm rooting for the Houston Astros. I mean, maybe these are Blue Jays fans who hate the Rays because, the Rays have inflicted so much pain on the Blue Jays. Maybe that's it. But other than that, I don't know if I can help you with this. I think another cool part of their story, like the first five guys who pitched in the game yesterday for Houston were rookies. It's kind of crazy when you think about it. And two innings here, two-thirds of an inning there, an inning in a third here. And it's a pretty cool story. If we didn't have the whole 2017 sign-stealing scandal, they'd be an easy team to root for, I think. The only other reason I can think of is maybe, the Altuve and the Yips thing. You hate to see that happen to anybody. And I will tell you, I know he was involved in it, although not to the extent of some of the other guys, I don't think. But Altuve is a great guy, and he is a guy to root for, even though he is on a team that a lot of people are rooting against. But I got to believe most of America is rooting for the Tampa Bay Rays right now. That's what it feels like to me.
With Dan Schulman on leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, it's, I think, impossible to comment on how this plays to the advantage or disadvantage of a team unless it's obvious to you, Dan. But just the way that we're watching the schedule play out now, six consecutive days with games and potentially a seventh here, like I'm looking ahead to game seven if we have one, and I don't think anybody argues that games number seven are a lot of fun. And if we have one here, it's because Houston has come all the way back, and so there'd be a lot of pressure on the Rays. But from a pitching perspective, like Glasnow and Greinke would be on 2 days rest. They would be available, but probably not for long. Which team do you think has benefited more or suffered more because of the schedule layout?
Well, it should benefit Tampa Bay more. Again, as Blue Jay folks, we understand how deep their pitching staff is, right? And how good their bullpen is, and how many guys down there Kevin Cash trusts. So, and their bullpen is deeper going into game six than it is going into game seven. So, if we would have a game seven, it would be Charlie Morton going for Tampa Bay, and my mind is blanking on who would be going for Houston right now, but it'll come to me. Oh, it'd be Lance McCullers Jr. going for Houston. So,
right.
Like two really good pitchers on regular rest. I wouldn't see Greinke being a part of it. I could see Glasnow being a part of it because he's done it before. But the interesting thing to me is, like, say Tampa Bay loses tonight. If they lose 9-1, and Kevin Cash is like Shane McClanahan, a rookie who's barely pitched. He's a starting pitcher, but if he loses this game, he'd almost rather lose it where he doesn't have to use Pete Fairbanks, where he doesn't have to use Diego Castillo. So he has like the full force of his bullpen available for a game seven. That having been said, this is not game four anymore. This is game six. So yesterday they were down one in game five, and he didn't use his key guys. He didn't bring in Nick Anderson until they tied it up. He had guys like Aaron Sluggers pitching. He's not bad, but he's not Nick Anderson. So the Tampa Bay staff is better, but sometimes the way the games go dictates if you have to use your key guys or not. And I think if they're down one today, I think he will use Fairbanks. I think he will use Castillo, even though he didn't yesterday, because he wants to stay out of a game seven. So the schedule, in my mind, has favored the Rays. But again, what these rookie pitchers for the Astros have done has been really nothing short of remarkable. I mean, guys with no experience going out there, and sometimes it's not pretty. They're hitting guys and walking guys and getting their pitch count up, but they're keeping them off the scoreboard to a certain extent, and it's been pretty remarkable.
I'm going to do something that you, and I know you hate this, Dan, but I want your thought on it. If Zach Greinke retired tomorrow, I think he's a Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. We know.
I think he is too. Yeah, Chris Singleton and I had this conversation during game four. And I said to him, what do you think? And he was like, oh, yeah, like definitely a Hall of Famer. I'm not in that category. I'm in. So I spent a little bit of time looking at it because we were talking about it on the air. You know, he's been around a long time. His overall numbers are very impressive in what's been a strong hitters era. He's won a Cy Young. I don't know if it helps him that he also was a, you know, multiple time Gold Glover, multiple time Silver Slugger winner. Like he's done those things well too. And I don't know if that ultimately helps a guy. He's been in the playoffs a lot. His playoff record is okay. It's not great. I don't think it hurts him, but I don't think it helps him. But my guess would be yes, maybe not first ballot, but yes, eventually that he would get in.
Dan Schulman with us on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Atlanta bounces right back. So I think after the ninth inning of game two and the 15-run outburst, including the 11-run first inning in game three, and that was the Dodgers' lone victory in the series so far, I think a lot of us thought, I got caught up in it too, oh, I mean, the Dodgers' bats have come to life. Braves throw a kid last night. Clayton Kershaw, with the iffy back, gets out of the gate okay, but ends up struggling. And Atlanta is now firmly in the driver's seat off of last night's victory with a 3-1 series lead in the NLCS. It's proof of Earl Weaver's old mantra, right? Momentum is only as good as your next day's starting pitcher.
Yeah. And to me, the Atlanta story is the most impressive one in the playoffs. I thought they were going to lose to Cincinnati in the first round. And everybody who asked me, I said, yeah, Cincinnati's got that incredible pitching staff, and they got Bauer and Castillo and Gray, and they're going to beat Atlanta. Atlanta doesn't have the pitching. They've got, you know, they've got Max Fried and they've got Ian Anderson, who's really good, but he's a rookie, and they've got nobody after that. That was the story I was selling over and over and over again. And Atlanta shut them out in both games. Cincinnati didn't score a run in the division series. And then, if I'm not mistaken, in the division series, Atlanta threw two more shutouts. And it's incredible what they're doing. I mean, Fried has been great. Anderson has been great. You know, Bryce Wilson last night, like, he's not a guy you would have expected to go out and pitch in the playoffs, never mind start, never mind thrive against arguably the best offensive team in baseball this year. Their bullpen's really good. Their offense is really good, and we're seeing that. I got back from my game in the sixth inning, I guess, last night. So I saw the sixth inning, and I mean, it was good at bat after good at bat, deep count after deep count, line drive after line drive. They had great at bats last night, and the Dodgers aren't hitting well, other than, you know, the ninth inning in game two and the first inning in game three. Kershaw said he was really good through five and then ran into trouble in the sixth. You know, Buehler can't throw a lot of innings because of the blister. Kenley Jansen is like a mop-up guy for them now, not their closer anymore. It's amazing. Year after year, they're the best team in baseball during the regular season, and year after year, something jumps up and gets in their way in the postseason. And I've been incredibly impressed with Atlanta. I didn't think they had the 3, 4, 5 starters to... if there's such a thing as a five-starter anymore. I didn't think they had the back-end starters to do this. Didn't think they had any chance to do this. And it's pretty remarkable what they're doing as well. So you look at surprises, right? And this is what baseball gives us, I think, more than other sports. It gives us surprises, and we're seeing a lot of them in October.
You know, I'm a big 49ers fan, Dan, and you know I can't stand your Packers, but just for proof that I can be objective as well as occasionally objectionable, this is a conversation Ziggy, Hugh Burrell, and I had last hour.
Packers and Bucks. We got
Green Bay.
Aaron Rodgers is a man possessed.
By the way,
now,
it does not make me happy to say that, but I do think Green Bay wins that game. There you go.
There you go. Well, so who do you dislike less, Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady?
Who do I dislike less? I don't dislike Tom Brady. And my argument often about, I'm not necessarily in a Rash Madani's Aaron Rodgers realm. My argument has been is that Green Bay should, to this point, should have done more with Aaron Rodgers' greatness over the last 10 or 12 years.
Yes, and if they had had a different coach, they would have.
As I think Dallas might be finding out right now?
Yeah, yes, Their offense was predictable, and I mean, look at what they're doing right now. And Devontae Adams hasn't played the last two games. Like you know, go ahead and start naming receivers on the Green Bay Packers, right? And LaFleur is obviously a better offensive coach than McCarthy was. And you're right; they should have done more with Aaron Rodgers' greatness. But that's no reason for you to be as objectionable as you've been about the Packers. But he is. I mean, he's one of the greats of all time. And I think had they surrounded him with better options, surrounded him with the options that Tom Brady has had, for example, or had a better mind running their offense like Tom Brady had for all those years, for example, I think he would have won 3-4 Super Bowls. I really do. But this year has been fun. I mean, there's scoring points like crazy, and Aaron Jones is doing well. And I've got lots of time to keep talking about this if you don't have a break to go. Whatever you need.
Donald Driver and Randall Cobb. Those are my two names. No, okay, that's from a few years ago.
From a few years back. So.
Good to hear your voice. Keep enjoying it, and we'll be listening, Dan. Thanks.
Okay, guys. Have a great day.
Dan Shulman, and he'll be our guest again next week. On leadoff, he's calling the ALCS, Rays, and Astros. Hugh into studio. Get you set for good show on the weekend next. So are you just going to spend the weekend recuperating? Is that the... whose right hand is not injured right now?
Mine, because I didn't take as many swings as you guys, and I didn't break a bat like you did, and I didn't make contact as much as Ziggy did, so I'm actually okay.
You're okay.
Yeah.
How are you feeling,
Ziggy? My left arm is actually not well today.
Yeah, but you got elbow problems and stuff.
Yeah,
right?
I got an elbow and shoulder problem. Left side, not good. I felt okay swinging through the. I mean, it felt a little uncomfortable, but today I could feel the actual elbow joint. I don't know. I got to put something on it.
It'll be tomorrow that it really hurts. It's never the day after. It's always
the day after. Yeah. I know you'll be listening to Baseball Central this afternoon at 2:00, Ziggy. I expect Jeff Blair to be.
Well, Jeff Blair, I listened to yesterday. Most days I get a chance to hear part of it, and Barker didn't give Jeff Blair anything.
Right.
Because Jeffy wanted to know.
Oh, yeah.
And Barker wouldn't tell him.
There was a, what do you call that? One of those, when a press release is handed out, but it's embargoed. There was an embargoed.
Yeah.
Easy for me to find words. Easy to find words for me on a Friday morning. Have a wonderful weekend. We are back at 6:00 Monday morning. Good show is next.
Wow. It's impressive.